It is Friday morning. Good morning to you. And look, it was such great news to hear that the Wildlife Habitat Port Douglas has been inducted into the prestigious Ecotourism Australia Hall of Fame. Yes, round of applause, absolutely. They have had 20 years of innovative advanced eco certification that's been really maintained at the highest standards around there, making the Wildlife Habitat Australia's leading environmental wildlife experience, providing visitors with a chance to observe close up. And Marion and I have seen this for ourselves when Jeremy showed us around a huge range of flora and fauna. Now, only 14 operators Australia-wide have been acknowledged with this achievement, so it's pretty spectacular. So, in the studio this morning, I've got Rebecca Lynch. She is the Wildlife Manager and the Communications Coordinator, Jeremy LaBeouf, and they've joined me in the studio. Good morning to you guys.
Good morning. It's lovely to
be here.
Good
morning, Paul.
Well, what can I say? Congratulations. We've had so. Let's have another round of applause for you. That is fantastic. Absolutely. Rebecca, how do you respond to such a wonderful award, an acknowledgement?
Well, it's an absolute pleasure and privilege to be awarded this this fantastic recognition for what we do here at Wildlife Habitat. We're always been about trying to be a leader in ecotourism here in Far North Queensland for a number of years now, and to be recognised for it is really quite incredible.
Why do you think you're so successful and you've won this award?
I think it's because of our commitment toward ecotourism in a general rule. So, you know, we're talking about recognition of our sustainability practices, also our ability to recognise cultural significance in the area, and of course to try and incorporate education into the many visitors that we have come through the habitat every year.
Jeremy, good morning to you.
Good morning, Paul. Just going on what Rebecca said. Early on, the Wildlife Habitat recognized the importance of ecotourism and the nature that we have in Port Douglas being the doorstep to the Great Barrier Reef and the world's largest living rainforest, nature rainforest. And so they were forerunners for the for ecotourism.
And you know, tourists now, Rebecca and Jeremy, are expecting us to look after the animals, for us to be eco-friendly. They're expecting it now.
Yeah, that's correct. And it's much more going to visit an area that has animals and just to have a look at them in a small cage. It's really important to be able to show what we can do to help these animals from a conservation perspective and also from education and breeding and really creating these arcs, if you like, of these animals in a captive environment.
When Jeremy showed us around, what I was quite impressed with Wildlife Habitat was how close I could get to animals, because usually if you go to a zoo, you're kept away with maybe a block of concrete or some wire or what have you. But what I loved about that was how close you could get to them.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's what we're all a part of. The immersive experience has been what has set Wildlife Habitat apart for decades, really. We've been a leader in this sort of experience in this field for quite a long time.
And where do you go? You don't just sit on your laurels, do you? You can't possibly do that because you've got to progress, haven't you? So what have you got in mind? Have you got exciting new things, or is that a constant sort of fluid thing?
Oh, we've constantly got exciting things coming up, Paul. There's always exciting things on the table, and we have an incredible set of minds that are part of the not only Wildlife Habitat but the Captor group that have always got crazy ideas coming up, and occasionally we actually fulfil some of these.
You do. Now, you're the communications guy there, Jeremy. How do you communicate how wonderful Wildlife Habitat is? I guess this award helps.
Oh, 100%. I mean, these accolades do help go a long way to showing off what we do at the habitat day in, day out. Like, it is a fluid thing that we continuously are doing and mindful of doing is putting the environment and earth decisions first.
And the people appreciate it. The tourists appreciate it. What I like about your place too is when you go into that first doorway, first of all, you don't have to pay to go into the doorway and go into that wonderful gift shop. Let's start at the beginning. You kind of go into that lovely little gift shop area, which has so many nice local things that you can purchase there that are made in the Douglas Shire, which I absolutely love.
That's correct. And that's a part of the sustainability accreditation that we get is by supporting local businesses and local artists that provide these fantastic goods that are provided for purchase in that gift shop, which is really a great range.
Okay, so the people come there, they go through that first entranceway. What do you try to introduce them to first? Because you basically take them there. They don't just go in and sort of wander around. You take them on a journey, don't you?
That's absolutely correct. And not only do we have the gift shop, but that's also an information centre. So anyone who's driving past can actually drop in and get all sorts of information on the Shire and the region, which is, you know, really, really well received. But you're right, it's a journey going through wildlife habitat. We go through different areas. We try to focus on specific habitats. So the first area that you walk into is actually woodlands, which are small birds.
Yep.
And you can also then head on into our wetlands and rainforest and savanna. And all of these areas actually have tours which you can attend, which are included in your price of entry. And you can actually learn so much about what we're actually looking at and seeing every time we go on one of these feed out tours.
Yeah. Look, it is a terrific place to visit. Give the listeners an idea. And we often have listeners who are tourists who might be thinking, oh, I might go to wildlife habitat. What animals you've got in there?
Well, we've got an excellent representation of animals that are found in the local region and specifically the wet tropics area. And that's what we pride ourselves on. We only have native Australian animals and with particular interest in endemic and local species. So you can, if you're unlucky enough to be travelling through the Dane Tree and all you've wanted to do is go and see a cassowary and you don't manage to see one on your trip, drop in and see us. We can provide a couple of those to have a bit of a look at. And you may even get to have a nice close encounter, not too close, a safe encounter, perhaps providing a grape or two to one of the cassowaries on one of the feed out tours. So that's an incredible experience and very, very unique.
And you've got kangaroos in there. And in fact, the day that Jeremy took us through, remember that kangaroo that we saw? And talk about close up, it was right next to us. It was fantastic.
That's right. Ellie actually was the eastern grey tank kangaroo that you saw. She's been raised from a joey as a wildlife habitat from one of our keepers, and she's such a special little girl. She's so friendly. She's beautiful.
Do you know, you're from Canada originally, and
yeah,
you must still get excited when you see the Aussie animals.
Oh, Paul, it's very cool. I come to work every day, and first thing I do, I go right to the kangaroos. I give them a little bit of a cuddle because it's so cool. Yeah, definitely.
And you've got a koala there called Mary,
our beautiful little girl, 12 months old. Yeah, she's definitely something very special.
Yeah, Mary's a gorgeous little northern koala that was bred in another zoo on the other side of the country 12 months ago. And she flew over several months ago now to join us and hopefully will be a part of our breeding program coming up. So we're involved in lots of different breeding programs, not just with koalas, but also with Lumholtz's tree kangaroos, which are an incredibly valuable and an endemic species to this region, and of course we have our saltwater crocodiles as well, and a number of different bird life species as well.
I'm going to get to those crocodiles. We're talking with Rebecca Lynch. She's the wildlife manager and communications coordinator, Jeremy LaBouffe. They're both in the studio with me now, and I was going to get to those crocodiles. What a fantastic experience. Jeremy took us to the feeding time. And by golly, there's a biggie in there, and it's a he or a she?
It's a he.
It's a he, and he jumps out of that water. And if you, I tell you what, you talk about getting close to a croc. That is as close as I want to get.
Yeah, I was actually wondering a little bit how close you took Paul on his visit there, Jeremy, for a minute.
Close enough so he could he had to stand back.
It. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So look, Babinda is a wild caught croc. He was hanging around a boat ramp a few years back and was causing a bit of problems with people putting their boats in and out down at Babinda. So he was caught up by EPA and then rehoused with us at Wildlife Habitat.
Yeah, I love the way you sort of get the other crocs, the smaller ones, and maybe some of the females, you get their attention over there and they're doing their bit, because this fella probably wouldn't want to share.
Yeah, he wasn't too bad at the start, but he's a little bit more protective of his food these days. So yeah, we do try to keep them separate. We don't want any inadvertent accidents. That's definitely not something that we'd want to happen. But obviously, if you can imagine any sort of animal, once they start getting into a feed drive or food drive, drive and the water is quite murky, you don't want any accidents to occur, which is why we feed them separately.
Exactly. You wouldn't want that to happen. Now, look, just recently, in fact, yesterday, I mentioned to the listeners that in this month there's been about 17 sightings of crocs, so that's one a day, even over on Low Isles. How do you react to that, that every single day this year we've spotted a croc somewhere?
Well, it's actually quite representative of what the population of crocodiles or estuarine crocodiles were 50, 60 years ago. Crocodiles were in quite large numbers around this region, and of course there weren't quite as many people. What happened then when we had you were able to go out and shoot crocodiles, and lots of people did so, it reduced the numbers down to very, very low levels. During that period of time, these areas have now been rehabited and spread out by humans. And so that's where you're getting people who haven't seen crocodiles in these regions for decades are now saying, oh, we're seeing these crocodiles. We've never seen them here before. They have been there before. They were just there long before we actually started inhabiting those areas. So that's where we're at with that.
Mm. Rebecca, how do you feel when you hear people saying there should be a cull, that there's just too many crocs out there?
Look, Wildlife Habitat are stand by the government's protective idea of making sure that human life is the most important thing, and to ensure that that problem crocodiles are removed from certain areas where there is likely to be contact between humans and crocodiles. However, we're also very, very passionate about educating visitors to the region, and also obviously locals as well. And most locals are pretty good, but complacency is a very, very dangerous thing. So we want to make sure that everybody's aware and they're croc wise up around this area, and make sure that they're not in a situation where they're going to inadvertently meet a crocodile. We always like to say to our guests that it's not the croc that you're going to, that you see, is the one that's going to get you. It's the one that you don't see. The crocs are very, very good at, they're an ambush predator. They know exactly where you are. They know what you're doing. They are very, very smart, and they can learn. So if you're doing something regularly in the same spot, same place every day at the same time, the crocs will learn very, very quickly. So
yeah.
Hence the problem with crocs around boat ramps and things like that.
And they can stay underwater. And, of course, you said they're very smart, and they are, because they've been around since prehistoric times. The dinosaurs went, but the crocs stayed.
Correct. They're very intelligent. They must be doing something right to be around for so many hundreds of thousands of years unchanged. But they're not going to get up on Formal Beach and start running down the beach after you or anything like that.
No.
This is where we say that being an ambush predator, they're an opportunistic feeder. They'll take opportunity when it presents itself. So if we don't put ourselves as humans in an opportunity where, or a situation where we could be taken as a food source, or be in an area where that is inhabited by crocodiles or likely to be inhabited by crocodiles, and we remember the rules of staying back from the edge of the water, not cleaning fish around boat ramps, or dangling arms and limbs into waterways, we can learn to coexist. But obviously, we just need to be very, very mindful that human life and is the most important thing.
Mm, and common sense, as I say, I've got some messages about being croc-wise on the station that we run, and I always say, common sense, you use common sense, you're going to be okay.
That's exactly right. Common sense is a fantastic thing. It'd be good if lots of people had it.
There are a few who don't. Rebecca Lynch and Jeremy LaBeouf, it's been fantastic to have you in. And just before you leave, I want to ask you, I know you know a little bit about bats.
Yeah.
Now, down Nautilus Street there, we live around that area, the bats come around at night time. What do you say about bats? Should we be looking up to the bats and saying, good on your bats, or should we be worried about the disease they carry?
We should absolutely be thanking bats for their existence.
Right.
I'm absolutely adamant on that one. Bats, in particular, if we're talking about spectacled flying foxes here around that area that you're talking, they're a keystone species. They are incredibly important to our environment. They are seed dispersers. They are pollinators. An animal that if you take them out of the ecosystem, everything's going to start to collapse.
Is that right?
That's correct. Mm. They're so important to the Daintree rainforest and also to the region. And with all of the heat waves that we've had just recently, we're looking at around about a third of the bat population, the spectacled flying fox population up here in the Cairns region, has been wiped out. So we're talking about over 23,000 deaths in that time period. So
wiped out by
the heat that we had, those unprecedented unprecedented temperatures that we had earlier in December and late November. Over 42 degrees is just, you know, completely unusual for up here. And it's the first time we've ever actually seen a huge die-off in spectacled flying foxes ever in the country. Well, there have been deaths within in other megabat families, like the grey-headed flying fox down south a couple of years ago. But these spectacled flying foxes are just incredibly important. And I don't know about you, but one of the most incredible things in the evening and seeing these bats fly out from their camps is just absolutely wonderful. And to see the decimated numbers now when they fly out, it just makes me feel very, very sad, and we just need to look after them as best we can.
I didn't know that. You know, I didn't know that they were that important to the ecosystem. You've really educated me this morning, and I bet a few listeners have gone, really? Because we read a lot of media reports about them carrying disease. What do you say about that?
They do absolutely carry ABLV, or Australian Bat Lyssa virus. It is quite a similar disease to the rabies virus, which is found in other countries. And in that respect, we need to be very, very cautious. Like crocodiles, we need to be very respectful of certain guidelines. You should never ever try to pick up or touch or handle a bat, whether it's a baby, whether it's an adult. Always call someone who's been vaccinated, so you can call us at Wildlife Habitat.
Yep.
We've got Carer Network. We can get someone out to assist if necessary, but yeah, you need to avoid bat scratches or bites. The way that particular disease is transferred is actually through saliva and through mucous membranes, so that's how it's transferred. So as long as you're not going and picking up and scratching and getting bitten by bats, you're going to be perfectly fine.
I do not want to touch a bat. I let them do their thing. I do my thing.
Excellent.
And I've always been a great fan of Batman anyway. So, you know, I kind of have respect for the bat sign. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah. That's a good thing.
And it sounds like we should all have respect for the bats. And as I said, you've educated me this morning and hopefully the listeners as well. Rebecca Lynch, Wildlife Manager and Communications Coordinator, Jeremy LaBeouf. Thank you for joining me in the studio. And once again, congratulations on Wildlife Habitat getting that eco prize. You thoroughly deserve it. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure.
To the Batmobile. Let's go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.